The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is brought to you by the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association, ensuring long-term growth in the world's greatest salmon fishery. Through investments in Bristol Bay science, infrastructure, marketing, and quality, the Bristol Bay RSDA, we are on board with you.
This is KDLG's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. I'm your host, Mike Mason. On today's program, we check in on the large push of salmon into and through the Nooshigak District, and we'll look at the latest genetic information from the Port Muller test fishery. We'll also take a look at some new research about how and when fish move through the test fishery area. All of that and more is coming up on the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report, but first, the latest announcements from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and King Salmon with an announcement for Agagic and Ugashik District commercial fishermen. The time of this announcement is 3 p.m. and the date is Saturday, June 22nd. Catch from Friday in Agagic was 195,000 fish. Cumulative catch is 1 million. Friday's tower counts were 47,000 sockeye, with a cumulative escapement of 231,000. In Agagic, commercial fishing will be permitted with drift gillnet gear from 10:30 a.m. until 3:30 p.m. Sunday, June 23rd, a five-hour period. Commercial fishing with set gillnet gear will be permitted from 10:15 a.m. until 6:15 p.m. on Sunday, June 23rd. An eight-hour period. Catch from Friday in Ugashik was 152,000. Cumulative catch is 173,000. The in-river test fish project should be operational sometime today, and the counting tower is scheduled to be operational June 26. The department flew an aerial survey of the Ugashik Lagoon today, but conditions were poor and no fish were observed. In Ugashik, commercial fishing will be permitted with set gillnet gear from 9 a.m. until 9 p.m. on Sunday, June 23rd, a 12-hour period. Commercial fishing with drift gillnet gear will be permitted from 10 a.m. until 6 p.m. on Sunday, June 23rd, an 8-hour period. Fishermen in boat districts should stand by at 3 p.m. on Sunday, June 23rd, for the next possible announcement. This has been the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in King Salmon.
This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Dillingham with an announcement regarding commercial fishing in the Nooshigak District. This is Westside Salmon Announcement Number 11, issued Saturday, June 22 at 3 p.m. The cumulative Wood River sockeye salmon escapement at 6 a.m. was 106,000. The Nooshigak River sockeye salmon escapement through June 21 was 233,000. The King salmon escapement was 23,665. Commercial fishing with drift gillnets in the Nooshigak District will be extended for 24 hours until 7 p.m. June 23. Commercial fishing with set gillnets in the Nooshigak section of the Nooshigak District will be extended until 12 a.m. June 24. As previously announced, commercial fishing with set gillnets in the Agushik section of the Nooshigak District has been extended until 12 a.m. June 24. This has been the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Dillingham.
This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in King Salmon with an announcement for commercial permit holders in the Naknek-Quijek District. The time is 12 noon and the date is Saturday, June 22nd. The midnight to 6 a.m. sockeye estimate past the Naknek Tower was 700 for cumulative escapement of 25,000. For the Quijek River, the cumulative escapement is 900 sockeye. The Naknek-Quijek District will open to set gillnet gear for a 7.5-hour period from 11 a.m. until 6:30 p.m. on Sunday, June 23rd. The Naknek section of the Naknek-Quijek District will open to drift gillnet gear for a 6.5-hour period from 12 noon until 6:30 p.m. Sunday, June 23rd. The next announcement for the Naknek-Quijek District will be at 12 noon on Sunday, June 23rd. This has been the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and King Salmon.
You're listening to the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report here on listener-supported public radio, KDLG. The commercial sockeye harvest in Bristol Bay has topped 1.8 million with another 417,000 fish added to the total Friday. The Igigig District boasts the most impressive harvest thus far, with another 195,000 sockeye taken Friday to push the district total to just over 1 million fish. Next up is the Naknek-Wejack District, where fishermen harvested 70,000 sockeye on Friday before the district closed at 9 o'clock in the morning. That pushes the season total to over 595,800 sockeye. Friday was a big day in the Ugashik District with a harvest of 152,000 fish to push the season total to over 172,900. So far, the harvest in the Nushagak and Togiak districts are not being reported by Fish and Game. Now for a look at the latest escapement numbers. In Igigik, another 47,400 sockeye were counted Friday to push the season total to 230,100 fish. The escapement goal for the Igigik River is between 800,000 to 1.4 million. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game estimates there are another 40,000 sockeye in the Igigik River that have not yet been counted. The total run to the Igigik District is now counted at over 1.3 million sockeye. Fish and Game is reporting that another 14,800 sockeye were counted as escapement to the Naknek River on Friday. That pushes the season total to nearly 24,000 fish. The escapement goal for the Naknek River is 800,000 to 1.4 million. Friday was the first day of counting escapement to the Kwejak River, and just 894 fish were counted. Total run thus far to the Naknek-Wejack District is over 590,600 sockeye. The escapement towers are not yet up and running in the Ugashik and Togiak districts. Friday's sockeye escapement to the Nushagak River was counted at 160,800 fish. That pushes the season total to 233,300. Sockeye escapement to the Wood River was counted at 79,500 fish Friday. That pushes the total to 87,200. If you add the escapement through 6 o'clock this morning, the total to the Wood River climbs to over 106,000 sockeye. Total run thus far to the Nushagak District is 320,600 sockeye. However, Fish and Game is not yet reporting the harvest numbers from the Nushagak District. Total run to Bristol Bay through Friday is now over 2.4 million fish. The preseason forecast anticipated a run this year of 26.3 million. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game reports that on Friday there were on average 964 sockeye per drift delivery in the Ugashik District. The number in the Naknek-Wejack District was 424 sockeye per drift delivery. In Igigik, there were on average 336 sockeye per drift delivery. Friday's daily traditional index number from the Port Moeller test fishery was 152. That pushes the cumulative traditional index number up to 962. That is still the highest cumulative index number on record through June the 21st. The previous high was 878, recorded back in 1995. That year, the run actually came in at 61 million sockeye. The average cumulative index number for this point in the season is 532. And the Alaska Department of Fish and Game is not yet producing a full daily run summary. Instead, they're producing a partial summary that is only being distributed via email. And it is not yet available on the Fish and Game website. As noted earlier, the Port Moeller test fishery continues to post very large index numbers, and the cumulative traditional index number is the highest on record. The crew of the test boat didn't fish stations 2 and 10 on Friday, but they still hauled in 243 sockeye. 84 fish were taken at Station 6, 81 fish taken at Station 4. The catch at Station 8 was 78 sockeye. 144 of the sockeye were caught in the 5 and an 1/8 inch mesh panels. 99 fish were taken from the 4 and a 1/2 inch mesh panels. Friday's catch produced a daily replacement index number of 50, which pushed the cumulative replacement index number up to 386. Daily traditional index number from Friday's fishing effort was 152. That pushes the cumulative index number up to 962. As noted earlier, that's the largest cumulative number on record. Previous high was 878, recorded back in 1995. The Port Moeller test fishery is scheduled to run through July the 10th. And the updates from the test fishery can be found online on the website of the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association at bbrsda.com. And the Alaska Department of Fish and Game has released the latest stock composition summary from the fish caught as part of the Port Moeller test fishery. The summary covers the sockeye caught and analyzed on June the 18th and 19th. Over 30% of the fish were apparently bound for the Igigik District. Area management biologist Paul Solomon believes those fish have already arrived in the district.
And that's based specifically on the Nushagak signal. The first genetics data set didn't have any noosh fish in it, and this one did, and the fish showed up there last night. So I think those fish are probably already in Igigik and probably through the district.
The stock composition summary shows that 20.5% of the sockeye were from the Quijack River stock. Just over 19% were from the Nooshigak River stock. Nooshigak District Area Management Biologist Tim Sands says that percentage is odd.
It was very interesting. I'm not sure. You know, it's only one data point. It's a lot different than the forecast. You know, the forecast was 3-1 Wood River to Nooshigak, and for it to come out with 5-1 Nooshigak to Wood River in the genetics is very interesting. It's just really too early to say that that's a definitive thing. These things happen, you know, you're taking a random sample of a random sample, and sometimes things just get skewed a little bit where it's not as representative as maybe you hoped it was. So it would be nice to see a couple more data points and see if that continues to be that way.
The stock composition summary shows that just 4.2% of the analyzed sockeye from the Port Muller test fishery had a genetic signal for the Wood River. 13.9% of the fish were apparently headed to the Ugashik River. 7.9% were bound for the Naknek River. The genetic signal for sockeye bound for the North Peninsula was 2.5%, and just 1.1% of the fish showed a genetic signal for the Ugashik River. In addition to the genetic data, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game has also released the first age composition summary of the season. It shows that over 52% of the fish caught as part of the Port Muller test fishery were 1-3 sockeye. Just over 19% were 1-2 fish. Over 16% were 2-2 sockeye. Nearly 11% were 2-3 fish. In the Igigik District, the age composition summary covers the tested fish that were caught between June the 6th and the 19th. Nearly 60% of the fish were 1-3, while over 14% were 1-2 fish. Another 14% were 2-2 sockeye. In the Naknek-Quijack District, the sampled fish were taken between June the 12th and the 19th. 43% of the fish were 1-3 sockeye. Nearly 28% were 2-2 fish. 25% were 1-2 sockeye. In the Nooshigak District, the sampled sockeye were caught between June the 7th and the 19th. Over 62% of the fish were 1-3 sockeye. Another 37% of the fish were 1-4. The age composition summary can be found online on the website of the ADF&G Gene Conservation Laboratory. And we'll have more of the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report coming up in just a moment. You're listening to KDLG's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. I'm your host, Mike Mason. One of the West Side set netters who took advantage of the opener last night was Mike Davis from Dillingham. He fishes at Coffee Point. He says the fish were certainly there, but the weather overnight was something else.
This is some of the worst weather that I've been fishing here over 30 years, and I've never seen it kick this hard. And it just got worse, yeah. And some people went out and they saw what we were going through, and they turned around and went back. But, there was incredible winds and waves, and yeah.
But
yeah.
The fish were there.
The fish were there, absolutely. The fish were there, but with the waves that were happening, you know, the nets were rolling, it was all you could do to fish. And we were only running 25 fathoms.
Davis says he and his crew fished the best they could through the night and made a delivery early Saturday morning before calling it a day on account of the weather. He says the tinder was reporting gusts out of the southeast over 50 miles per hour this morning. The opener came quick for some of the West Side fleet. Davis says he doesn't recall such a big push of fish so early in the season before.
You know what? I don't remember, but I talked to Fish and Game, and he says, actually, 2005 we had an opening like this. But not an opening where you had that kind of length of time. Definitely a big push of fish, and he's looking at winds, and so he wanted people out there. But a lot of people had the good sense to stay home.
What now?
Well, I think, you know, we're we're looking at this, the tail end of these fish being pushed. It's, you know, it's because I fish on the west side. We're going to get back out there soon.
Davis and his crew hope to get the nets back in the water sometime early on Sunday. The most active of Bristol Bay's five commercial fishing districts has been the Igigik District that features a total harvest of over 1 million fish. Paul Solomon is the ADFNG area management biologist. He says escapement to the Igigik River continues to be steady.
We've been leaking fish at a nice rate. We're looking at another probably 30,000 fish day to day, plus or minus, if it holds. And we're in a nice position right now. I'm happy with it.
Escapement to the Igigik River was counted at 47.8 thousand fish Friday to push the total to over 230,000. Fishing Game estimates that there are another 40,000 sockeye in the Igigik River that have not yet been counted as escapement. Friday's harvest in the Igigik District was 195,000 fish. That pushes the season total to just over a million. Solomon says this year's run to the Igigik District is shaping up much different than anything he's ever seen before.
It's the biggest we've ever seen for this time. That doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a large run. It just means it's going to be, it's for what it is for right now, it's bigger than we've ever seen for this time before. Again, that does not necessarily translate into a large run at this point.
The forecast for the Igigik District is a run of 6.1 million sockeye. So far, the run, including harvest and escapement, is counted at over 1.3 million fish in Igigik. Thursday was a record-breaking day for the mighty Nooshogak River on the west side of Bristol Bay. Sockeye escapement topped 160.8 thousand fish to push the season total to 233.3 thousand. Sockeye escapement to the Nooshogak River is well on its way to meeting the lower end of the escapement goal. The goal is 370 to 760 thousand fish. Tim Sands is the ADFNG area management biologist for the Nooshogak District, and he says Thursday, or rather Friday, sockeye escapement to the Nooshogak River was huge. He looked at the records and found a couple of days with similar or larger levels of escapement, but those days were in early July. He couldn't find a record of such a large escapement number for the Nooshogak River in June.
You know, nothing comes close to that. I think our highest previous daily for that day was, I see, a 29,000. Yeah, shatters all previous records.
Besides the large sockeye escapement, the Nooshogak River also boasted large escapement numbers for kings and chums. Nearly 92,000 chum salmon were counted at the sonar counting site near Portage Creek, and the king count was just over 11,000. That pushes king escapement to over 23.6 thousand, which Sands confirms is within the historical curve used to gauge whether or not the escapement goal of 95,000 kings will be met. Sand says the large escapement to the Nooshogak River is a good thing.
But whether it means it's strong, whether it's just early, it's just too early to say. I mean, obviously, optimistically, we're going to say it's strong.
Sands confirms that such a strong early run to the Nooshogak River makes it less likely that he will need to use the new mesh restriction of 4.75 inches or smaller that was approved by the Alaska Board of Fisheries back in December to protect sockeye bound for the Nooshogak River. It also makes it less likely that the Department of Fish and Game will need to use the Wood River Special Harvest Area. Currently, both the drifters and set netters in the district have been given fishing time, but the weather's not been good. Currently, there's a gale warning in effect for all of Bristol Bay waters, with strong winds out of the southeast. Sands maintains that is not ideal for fishing in the Nooshogak District.
I heard that a lot of people quit. It was just too rough. I don't know what that means. I don't know how many people quit.
The other major river that impacts things in the Nooshogak District is the Wood River, where escapement spiked Friday with over 79.5 thousand sockeye counted. Sands confirms that another 18.8 thousand sockeye were counted through 6 o'clock this morning to push the total escapement above 106,000.
I mean, we're still seeing strong escapement, so our response is going to be to give more fishing time.
At 3 o'clock today, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game issued an announcement allowing additional fishing time for both the drifters and the set netters in the Nooshogak District. Drifters have been extended through 7 p.m. Sunday night. Set netters in the Nooshogak section have been extended through midnight Sunday. Set netters in the Agushik section have also been extended through midnight Sunday. Sand says everything looks good so far in the Nooshogak District, with strong escapement to both the Nooshogak and the Wood Rivers.
I guess we're kind of exactly where we want to be. We're plenty of escapement in the Nooshogak, the Wood. We're fishing on the day we hit 100,000 on the Wood River. which is what we've repeatedly stated would be our goal, is to put nets in the water on that day. Because we're so far ahead on the Nooshigak, we feel like we can be more aggressive and offer more fishing time, and we look like we're doing well on Kings. We're above the 95,000 curve on Kings, and it looks like it'll be another strong day for everything up on the Nooshigak.
Sands asserts that the sockeye run into the Nooshigak district is earlier than he was expecting, and he could only come up with one time the fleets were fishing on the 22nd of June during his time in the district. All permit holders in the Nooshigak district must register with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game before they go fishing. The Fish and Game office in Dillingham will be open Sunday from 8 a.m. until 12 noon. Sands confirms the department staff are processing the registration cards. He anticipates having a count of permits and vessels sometime on Sunday. All of the informational updates and the announcements for the Nooshigak district can be heard by calling the recorded message line at 842-5226. This is the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. Listening to KDLG's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. I'm your host, Mike Mason. For years, the Port Moeller test fishery has been used as a tool by fishermen, processors, managers, and others to gauge the sockeye resource that is 5 to 8 days away from the inshore fishing districts in Bristol Bay. In recent years, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game has been able to use new genetic technology to pinpoint what particular stocks of sockeye are moving through the test fishery area. A new study sheds some light on the usefulness of that genetic data. Tyler Dan is a fisheries geneticist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, and he's one of the co-authors of a paper that was recently published in the Canadian Journal of Fisheries and Aquatic Sciences. He believes the genetic information that comes out of the Port Moeller test fishery is useful to stakeholders in the Bristol Bay commercial fishery.
You can interpret genetic estimates as having two sources of error. One is just sampling error that's associated with any type of biological sampling, and we can't get around that. The catches in that net are a sample of what's swimming by, and how representative that is or not is a function of sampling error. But assuming it's a random sample, our error that we contribute with our baseline is very small, and we go through a lot of rigorous testing of the baseline and have come to a point with the Bristol Bay Genetics Program that we're really confident with our estimates. So I think that our estimates are able to provide a really good snapshot of what's swimming by Port Moeller on those days.
The genetic information from the Port Moeller test fishery allows the Department of Fish and Game to differentiate the stocks present in the Port Moeller catch. Dan says there are some trends that become evident when you look at the available data.
We were able to pretty well define spatial and temporal trends in stock composition in the test fishery. Spatial being which fish are more often caught inshore versus offshore. And good examples for those would be Ugashik. Those fish are most commonly caught on the inshore stations 2 and 4, and their contributions decrease as you go further offshore. And that makes sense when you think of an east side stock generally migrating closer to shore. But on the other hand, the Wood River tends to be caught at higher levels, more often offshore, stations 8, 10, and 12. They're caught throughout the whole transect, but are caught in higher proportions in those offshore stations. So it does look like these fish are segregating spatially all the way out of Port Moeller.
The Port Moeller test fisheries conducted offshore of Port Moeller with sampling stations spaced every 10 nautical miles along a transect between Port Moeller and Cape Newenham, perpendicular to the migration of the sockeye returning to Bristol Bay. Every day of the test fishery, the vessel fishes 5 stations that are labeled stations 2, 4, 6, and 10. Dan says a look at the data also shows some trends in regards to timing.
The Nooshigak stock of fish is generally only observed in the test fishery catches early in the season. Normally by about June 26 or so, they're no longer caught. Whereas the Alagnak tends to show the opposite trends of never really being present in the first 5 periods. Say to June 22nd or 26th or so, and then they're present. So we do see variability among stocks, but also some very clear trends in both space and time.
In the recently published paper, Dan and his co-authors note that the Ugashic, Alagnac, and to a lesser degree the Kwijak stocks consistently migrated through the test fishery area later than other stocks. They also point out that Naknek and Wood River stocks appeared to be distributed throughout the 30 days of the fishery. Dan observes that very few non-Bristol Bay stocks are caught in the test fishery.
We've never seen, on average, across the 5 years we included in this study, an estimate greater than 5% for North Pan or Kuskokwim. So it's really dominated by the nine stocks within the bay and the large stocks. Togiak and Igushik are occasionally present, but at pretty small numbers. So it's really dominated by the major abundant stocks in the bay.
The Bristol Bay sockeye salmon run and fishery are well documented with a wealth of information about catch and escapement. Dan hopes to be able to use the data from the fish sampled in the test fishery and the inshore districts to better understand the sockeye resource.
We run about 2,000 fish a year from the test fishery, but closer to about 6,000 a year from the commercial catch inshore. And one thing that I'd like to look into in the future is that travel time by stock between the test fishery and the districts. I think that'd be a really neat thing to help maybe provide more information from the same data. And on the sampling end, one of the things that BBSRI is looking into is what are the effects of catch on net saturation? Do we see a point where you get so many fish in the net, it's not fishing as well? Water is generally clearer out there. So that's something that folks are thinking about on the catch sampling end. And all these things might help us to provide better information from the same data collection platform.
Every fall, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and the University of Washington's Fisheries Research Institute put out a preseason forecast for the Bristol Bay sockeye run. Those forecasts are often fairly accurate in predicting the total run, but in the new article, the researchers write that the preseason forecasts only poorly predict the stock's specific abundance. The authors further claim that the genetic information from the Port Muller test fishery catch has given fishery managers some relative abundance information within 4 days of capture. Since the travel time between Port Muller and the inshore districts is 5 to 8 days, that has allowed managers to shift fishing effort among districts to account for that abundance information. One of the managers to use the genetic data to inform his decision-making process is Nooshigak District Area Management Biologist Tim Sands.
Gives me more confidence about what's happening. So if we have a high percentage of Nooshigak District fish in Port Muller, I don't need to be as conservative as I would be if it was a low percentage. So I can bet on the come, I guess, because I have that additional information to give me a little more confidence.
The shifting of fishing effort based on the analysis of the genetic information has occurred several times. Sand says it's happened quite often in the Nooshigak District.
When we were having those great runs in the 2007, 2008, 9, 10, every year it was like, oh, look, we got 25, 30% Wood River fish or Nooshigak District fish. We got fish coming. We don't have to worry about slowing down. We can keep fishing. Last year, we couldn't see the same high percentage of fish, and so it made us less aggressive, I guess, you know. But it's harder to tease out what it means when it's a lower number. When it's a higher number, it's easier to be more confident. Lower number, it makes you less confident about everything.
This year's Port Muller test fishery got started on June the 10th and is expected to run through July the 10th. The Port Muller test fishery has been around for decades, and it's been run by several entities, including the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, the University of Washington, and for the last several years, the Bristol Bay Science and Research Institute. Fish and Game's Tyler Dan says the test fishery is not just useful, it's unique.
It is. In the way that it's used by managers, processors, and the fishermen, with just the great genetic structure that exists with Bristol Bay sockeye salmon, and the distance between the inshore districts and the test fishery, it's really sort of a perfect storm of things to create this informational value out of the data that we produce. There are other test fisheries in the state where genetic stock composition is applied, for example, Chinook and the Yukon, but it's not quite used in the same way that it is with the Bristol Bay sockeye resource. So it really is a pretty special application.
The daily updates and genetic information from the Port Mueller test fishery can be found on the website of the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association at bbrsda.com. KDLG will also be providing extensive coverage of the test fishery during our local news and in the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report, which will continue coming up in a moment.
The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is made possible in part by AIFMA, the Alaska Independent Fishermen's Marketing Association, 1-800-816-3741.
This is listener-supported public radio, KDLG. Some new research from the University of Alaska indicates that one of the best ways to improve food security in Alaska is to create a series of new small commercial fisheries. Alaska boasts a wealth of seafood that is both consumed locally and exported out of the state. However, it can often be challenging to buy locally produced seafood because it's either too expensive or is not available in grocery stores. Philip Loring is a researcher with the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and he confirms the new research was focused on the Kenai Peninsula.
We started the research because a lot of, in some working groups down in the peninsula, a lot of people expressed challenges with getting locally caught seafood unless they fish for it themselves. So the frustration was with the lack of local marketing of commercially caught seafood.
Loring was joined by another UAF professor and a recent master's degree graduate from Homer in surveying 1,500 Kenai Peninsula households back in the year 2011. They also interviewed many people involved in the personal use dip net fisheries on the peninsula, and they examined where locally produced seafood can be purchased. Loring confirms that often it's difficult or impossible to find locally produced seafood on store shelves, and that lower-income residents often don't have access to local seafood.
So what we found, really, is that, yes, so there, you have a small group of people who can't afford to buy it themselves. They don't have the opportunity to buy it themselves because it's not in the, really in the stores. And they don't have the means, time, or equipment or what have you to go fish for it for themselves. So the really interesting finding for us was that people who have access to locally caught seafood, especially those people at the lowest income levels, report higher household food security than the people who don't have access to the locally caught seafood. There was a detectable difference. So local seafood is improving food security when you have access to it.
Alaska produces abundant amounts of seafood, and throughout much of the state, there are opportunities to harvest fish and other seafood through the numerous subsistence, personal use, sport, and commercial fisheries. Loring says those opportunities to harvest local seafood work in making many Alaskans more food secure.
But what all of the research on what's working with food systems and, eating local and rebuilding local food systems, all of that research shows that individual strategies can only get a community so far towards food security. What needs to develop are these small local-scale marketing strategies in agriculture, things like community-shared and community-supported agriculture. And in a couple of parts of the state, people are experimenting with community-supported fisheries as well. So what we're really interested in is figuring out what the barriers are, why more fishermen are not marketing their fish locally, or even just a portion of their catch locally. And we suspect from talking to fishermen that part of that is economics. It's just easier. They may not have the time because they spend all their day fishing, you know, how much work and how long the days fishing are. So figuring out the barriers that keep that fish, even just a portion of the total commercial catch, because that's all it would require, out of local markets, that's the real big question. Because if we can develop a stronger local economy, to provide locally caught seafood to local people, that would really boost the regional food security.
Loring confirms that one of the ideas put forward in the new research is to create some new small commercial fisheries that would be specifically set aside for producing seafood for local consumption.
You know, all of Alaska's commercial fisheries are managed as large-scale industrial commercial fisheries, and rightly so, because that's how they're fished. But, you know, by keeping the cost of entry high and by managing them that way, we wonder whether or not we're precluding the possibility that smaller-scale artisanal fisheries that are explicitly for providing seafood to Alaskans, whether or not that is another force that's pushing against the development of these fisheries. Is there some way that we can create policy that gives Alaska consumers a break, that makes it a viable business to fish and market some of that fish locally? We know that this works elsewhere in the world, particularly lesser developed countries. There's a lot of research on artisanal fisheries, and how these really strengthen regional food security. So if it works elsewhere, it seems as though we should be exploring that here as well.
While the new research was specifically focused on the Kenai Peninsula, Loring believes the same factors at play on the peninsula exist across much of the state.
And I do think that there are a lot of parallels between Kenai and the rest of the state. They may not be as extreme, but it may be sort of a microcosm at a subtler level, in that we have a lot of federally managed land in the Kenai. You have a lot of livelihoods that depend on fisheries. You have a lot of other hunting and fishing that go on. You do have some communities that are off of the road system. And you do have a single supply chain, you know, by road into Anchorage. Now, again, it's much closer, so it's probably much more subtle of an effect, some of these things there. But the parallels are there, I think. And so right now we're looking at deploying a very similar survey in other parts of the state. The Sitka Local Food Network is actually doing this on their own. They read our study and are now deploying their own local food and food security survey to find the same sorts of information out about their region. And I have other research in Bristol Bay, and I've been thinking about how we could go about in Bristol Bay and in other parts of Western Alaska, deploy a similar kind of research to see just how much what we've learned in the Kenai is relevant elsewhere.
The new study is called Seafood is Local Food, Food Security and Locally Caught Seafood on Alaska's Kenai Peninsula. It was published in the Journal of Agriculture, Food Systems, and Community Development. This is the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report here on KDLG. A longtime commercial fisherman who fished at Bristol Bay for decades passed away earlier this month due to complications related to a heart transplant. Tom Temple lived in Homer, but he fished each summer in Bristol Bay. His daughter Reba Temple says Bristol Bay was always a topic of conversation with her father. I caught up with Reba as she was floating around in the Igigik district on the family vessel, the Cloud 9, getting ready for Friday's opener.
Yeah, he loved it. He just kept talking about it till the last day. And this year we're running, he bought a new boat, but he couldn't come out. So, like, he wasn't going to be able to come out regardless. So we were out here, but he just loved coming out and fishing and figuring out where the fish were and figuring out what kind of mesh size to use and just pretty much all of it.
Tom Temple passed away on June the 6th at the Alaska Regional Hospital in Anchorage. Temple was born in 1957 and he fished commercially for 45 years. He fished Bristol Bay since the early 90s, and Reba Temple confirms that Tom fished up until just last year.
Yeah, he was out here last year. He had to, like, he got, like, ultrafiltration dialysis beforehand so he could come out, and then after that, and then he had to go on dialysis. But, yeah, he was out here last year.
Tom Temple died of complications related to his heart transplant, which he had back in 1986. Reba Temple says that didn't deter Tom from hitting the water of Bristol Bay in his classic old drift net vessel.
Yeah, we had, like, a 59 Marco, my sister and I, and my sister-in-law spray painted on the hull of it, so it looked kind of funky, but it was super small with, like, just a couple bunks, and we'd fit usually at least five members of the family on. He was fun. Dad's the only one that kind of made that work because it was just a pretty crappy little boat, but it was always a good time.
Tom Temple is survived by his wife Lynn, daughters Jill and Reba, and his son Ben. Reba Temple says Tom's presence is already missed aboard the Cloud 9.
It's been good. We're missing him. It's a big learning curve. A little bit worse when you get net in the prop and he's not there to help. So, yeah, we've been missing having him out here so much.
Reba Temple confirms that a memorial service for Tom Temple will be arranged in late August after fishing. And that concludes today's edition of the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. It airs each Friday, Saturday, and Sunday during the fishing season at straight up 4 p.m. Please be safe, watch the weather, and tune in tomorrow for another edition of the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report.
The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is brought to you by the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association, ensuring long-term growth in the world's greatest salmon fishery through investments in Bristol Bay science, infrastructure, marketing, and quality. The Bristol Bay RSDA. We are on board with you.